You know what I love about freedom? It's ultimately indefinable. It's similar to happiness or success. Everyone says they want it, and allegedly, a lot of people swear they'd die for it. But when you ask them what it actually is, or what it really means, they either start sounding like a bumper sticker or like a drunk philosophy major 2 weeks from dropping out. So the word freedom is especially provocative in the USA, obviously. And of course, you see it everywhere. It's in tattoos, printed on flags, and t-shirts made in China. And not all that long ago, it was screamed at strangers in Costco because someone either was or wasn't wearing a mask. Freedom here means everything and ultimately nothing. It's like a shapeshifter, and it's subjective. And one man's freedom is another man's prison. Now, to one person, freedom means the government staying out of your business. And to another, it means the government protecting you from various threats to our alleged freedom. To someone else, it means the right to own 37 guns and a grenade launcher. But the reality is that sooner or later, freedom almost always collapses into its opposite. Because interestingly, the more we chase it, the more enslaved we seem to become eventually. I mean, we're free to choose from 500 brands of heavily processed foods, but not really free to avoid drowning in debt. Now, at the time of recording this video, in the US, we're still arguably free to say what we want to say online. As long as you don't piss off the algorithm. And of course, if you don't mind arguing with bots. I mean, we're free to vote as long as it's for one of two brands of the same rotting product owned by the same handful of authoritarian plutocrats or oligarchs. Freedom is like that date you had in college who seemed incredible for like the first hour. You know, deep and mysterious, fun, sexy. But then, halfway through the night, you realize, no. This person is completely batshit, and you might not even make it out of this alive. All right, so today, let's pick this apart a little and really ask ourselves, what the hell is freedom exactly? Philosophically, politically, spiritually, where does it end? And where does it turn into its opposite? And why does everyone sound like they've been concussed when they try to explain it? Now, when philosophers talk about freedom, they don't mean it in the Costco parking lot sense. They mean something a little more depressing, but nonetheless more substantial. Jean-Paul Sartre called it being condemned to be free, which sounds dark but poetic until you realize it means you're basically screwed either way. You're free, yes, but that freedom comes with responsibility for everything you do and no one to blame when it all falls apart. It's like being dropped into a massive IKEA warehouse without any instructions. You can build just about anything you want. A bookshelf on steroids, or maybe a wobbly chair or whatever. But when it collapses and breaks your ankle, you can't yell at a customer service person because you put it together. Congratulations, my friend. You're free. So Albert Camus had a similar idea. He basically said life is absurd and freedom is waking up every day to that absurdity and still deciding to go on. Imagine realizing the universe has no plan, no script or safety net whatsoever, just raw, blank possibility. Now, at first, that sounds rather liberating, right? But then it hits you. Blank possibility also means blank accountability. Because every choice you make or don't make is yours. No excuses. And this is where most people start to quietly panic. Because we don't actually want absolute freedom. It's terrifying. We want the illusion of it. Just enough wiggle room to feel like we're choosing, but not so much that we have to carry the crushing weight of those choices. This is why people cling to religion or politics, astrology apps or whatever. It's comforting to outsource responsibility. Now, Kierkegaard called this simply dread. That gut sickening feeling when you realize you could jump off the cliff and no divine babysitter is going to stop you. The existential paradox is that freedom sounds like liberation, but in practice, it feels like vertigo. There's too many doors, too many paths, too much responsibility. So you're free to live however the hell you want, which means you're also free to ruin your life in 100 creative, humiliating ways. And many of us go about doing just that. So when someone says, look, I just want to be free, what they usually mean is, I just want enough freedom to feel alive, but not so much that I actually have to think about it. All right. Now, when it comes to politics, freedom is basically the ultimate con. It's the magic trick that every government and corporation and every angry individual on Facebook uses to sell you something. It's not a principle. It's a slogan. Basically an all-purpose marketing tool. Stick freedom on it, and people will line up like it's Black Friday at Best Buy. So the political philosopher, philosopher, there we go. What's his name? Isaiah Berlin. He drew a famous distinction between negative freedom and what's known as positive freedom. And both of these have their pros and cons if you dig in a little. Now, negative freedom is freedom from interference. Nobody's stopping you from speaking or worshiping or buying a jet ski that you can't afford. Positive freedom is to do something. to actually live in a way that's meaningful, which usually requires social structures like education, healthcare, and, you know, some assurance that you won't starve while you're chasing your dream. But there's a little catch. The U.S. seems to worship the more unhealthy aspects of negative freedom. The idea is, just don't tread on me, and I'll figure it out myself. Which, on some level, is very appealing. But in practice, it's often kind of a fantasy. Because freedom from interference doesn't mean very much if you're broke and sick, isolated, and struggling to pay rent. And sure, you're free to sleep under a bridge if you want. That's an example of negative freedom at work. On the other hand, positive freedom, the freedom to actually live well, sometimes gets painted as tyranny. If the government helps you get health care or limits a corporation from poisoning your drinking water, suddenly people yell about socialism and slavery. We're the only culture where being protected from dying of medical bankruptcy is somehow viewed as oppression. But look, I understand there's a lot more nuance to this, and it's not so simple. But this is exactly why the topic of freedom is interesting from a philosophical perspective. So Tocqueville noticed this way back in the 1830s. He admired America's obsession with liberty, but he also warned that a society built entirely on individual freedom risked turning into what he called soft despotism. That's when you think you're free, but really you're just drowning in bureaucracy and consumption. You're immersed in distraction. Your life isn't dictated by kings, but by paperwork. Paperwork and debt, and an endless stream of ads convincing you that you're incomplete without a new dining set or whatever. And here's the rather dark irony. The louder people scream about freedom, the less of it they usually have. So the guy flying the 20-foot don't tread on me flag in his yard is almost always tethered to 40 years of mortgage payments, car loans, medical debt, and a job that he despises. So, politically speaking, freedom is less about what you can actually do and more about who gets to control the narrative. And in the U.S., that narrative usually belongs to whoever's making the most money off of your fear of losing it. All right, at some point, after politics and philosophy have made you miserable, you start looking for a different kind of freedom, the spiritual kind, the freedom to not be driven insane by your own thoughts. Now, the Stoics said that real freedom isn't about what happens to you, it's about how you respond to it. Epictetus was a slave who became a philosopher, and he famously said, "You may chain my body, but my mind is free." And there is a quiet, solemn wisdom in that. Freedom isn't necessarily the absence of chains. It's the ability to stop caring that they're there. So Buddhism took this even further. It said, you suffer because you're attached to things, people, outcomes, etc. Freedom isn't really about getting what you want. It's about not really needing anything at all. Alan Watts, he used to say that freedom is realizing there's no one left to be free. Meaning, the you that's chasing liberation is the problem. Because the ego wants freedom. Like a dog chasing its tail. And you think you're escaping the leash, but really you are the leash. And, well, this brings us to modern spirituality, which somehow managed to screw this up too. So we turned detachment into a subscription service. People will pay $99 a month for meditation apps that promise to free them from the illusion of self through daily notifications and push alerts, reminding them to be present. And we've created this marketable version of enlightenment that still revolves around consumption and distraction. We want inner peace, but we want it express shipped. And we want freedom from the ego, but we want the ego to get credit for achieving it. And maybe that's the paradox. You can't buy or hack your way into freedom. You can't manifest it. And the more you chase it, the more you just push it away. Now, the truth is, most people don't actually want spiritual freedom. They want relief, comfort. They want a less painful prison, understandably. Real freedom, in any spiritual sense, doesn't look very exciting. It looks more like surrender, which of course isn't going to sell very well on social media. Now, the thing we don't want to admit is that most freedom eventually mutates into its opposite. Give it enough time, and every liberation movement turns into a bureaucracy. Every revolution turns into some kind of empire. Eventually, every so-called free thinker turns into an influencer selling t-shirts that they say, the t-shirts that say free thinker. It's entropy. Human beings just, they can't just leave well enough alone. We feel compelled to manhandle everything and somehow ruin everything we touch. We can't let freedom just be. We have to micromanage it, monetize it, legislate it, and eventually weaponize it against each other. And you can see this in every layer of our lives. The free market was supposed to liberate people from government control, but instead, it just liberated corporations from any accountability. The internet was supposed to lead us into this golden age by democratizing information. But instead, it turned into an Eye of Sauron surveillance machine that knows you'd rather be watching cat videos than thinking about your mortality. And even in personal life, freedom gets a little weird. People say, I just want to be free to live how I want, which is fabulous. But the minute they actually get this, they start scrolling Instagram for instructions. So, like most things these days, freedom has become a performance. It's a costume that you wear to prove you're not trapped while quietly checking your reflection to make sure it still looks authentic. Now, our understanding of freedom can also be manipulated by the state. We can be brainwashed or coerced. So in the book 1984 by George Orwell, the protagonist Winston Smith stated, freedom is the freedom to say that 2 + 2 = 4. But after his torture in the Ministry of Love, he ultimately accepts that 2 + 2 = 5 to ultimately to save himself. And these days, some folks are choosing to believe that freedom is the freedom to say that 2 + 2 makes whatever your brand engagement, or, you know, it makes whatever helps your brand engagement that week or that month or whatever. We live in this culture that worships individuality, but then punishes deviation. And we're told you're free to be whoever you want within the template. So you're free to do things that accentuate and empower your individuality, but just make sure that you post about it. Try to monetize it as much as possible and, stay on message, because even Rebellion now has a marketing department. This is how freedom collapses. Slowly, invisibly, under the weight of its own convoluted branding. The system doesn't need to take your freedom away. All it needs to do is convince you that you already have it. So we keep scrolling and working, keep consuming, proudly declaring our independence, while every choice we make was really pre-selected by a predictive algorithm. And the tragedy is that most people wouldn't trade this for actual freedom. Real freedom is terrifying. It's uncertainty, responsibility, and it's also silence. The kind of silence that makes you realize no one's coming to save you, and worse, no one's stopping you either. We've become so dependent on our invisible cages that the idea of stepping outside of them doesn't even feel like liberation. It just feels like loneliness. All right. So what does real freedom look like then? Well, probably not the version printed on t-shirts or sold in most self-help books, and not the political myth or the spiritual lifestyle brand, just actual freedom. The kind that isn't for sale and isn't trending. You know, the kind that doesn't require a subscription. Honestly, it's probably not what we think. I mean, real freedom looks kind of boring. It's unphotogenic. It doesn't fit in a caption. It looks like sitting with yourself long enough to realize you don't need to be anybody else. And it looks like not reacting to every little thing that tries to bait us. And it also looks like unplugging from the dopamine slot machine that's designed to keep us all enraged and distracted and continuously consuming. I think real freedom is quiet and subtle. It's the ability to say no. And not because someone told you to rebel, but because you actually don't want to play the game anymore. Freedom isn't about control. It's about release. And that's what makes it terrifying. Because once you stop fighting to control everything, your image and your status, your narrative, you lose all the comforting noise that kept you distracted from the fact that you don't really know who you are. You know, we keep talking about freedom as if it's something external, like we're all prisoners waiting for the warden to accidentally drop the keys. But what if the door's been open the whole time and we're just afraid to step out because there's no Wi-Fi on the other side? I think that's the real paradox here. Freedom is both the thing we crave the most and the thing we secretly avoid. Because the moment you have it, there's no one left to blame. You can't point to the government or your parents, capitalism, God, the universe, the algorithm, whatever. It's just you and your choices. So Sartre was right. We're condemned to be free. And most people would rather stay condemned than be free. So what do you do with that? Well, maybe you start with something small. Turn off your notifications. Stop arguing with strangers online. Buy less crap. Say no more often. And not as some minimalist virtue signal, but because every yes you give to nonsense is another leash around your neck. Maybe you redefine success. Not as endless accumulation, but as autonomy. Maybe you stop trying to be free from and start focusing on being free to. Free to create, to rest, to think, to fail, to fuck up, to sit in silence without refreshing a screen to see if you still exist. Real freedom, it might not look like fireworks and slogans. It might just look like a Wednesday afternoon where you don't feel the need to escape your own life. Because the truth is, freedom, it isn't something handed down by a government or unlocked through enlightenment. It's the moment you stop chasing everyone else's definition of it. And that's the harshest, most liberating part. Freedom doesn't feel like victory. It feels like surrender. And maybe that's what makes it ultimately real. Well, there's a lot more that could be said about this, but I think that's all I got for today. And as I always say, thanks for watching.